by the way, first of all, I am not the normal preacher at Chapel at Seaside, and that's going to be some great news today, because if you like it, it'll be just kind of a special one-off kind of thing. I'll be back next week as well, but if you don't like it, I'm not the normal guy, so you got to come back. You got to come back to the chapel, because Andrew Beard and his wife Sarah, who lead this church so well, they're just tremendous people, and Andrew's become a really good friend of mine, and it's a real blessing for me to get to be here a couple times a year. It's just been wonderful. But we, my wife and I, our five kids, we live in Atlanta, Georgia. Anybody live in Atlanta? Any Atlantans? A few of you? Yeah, that's awesome. The rest, how many of you, this is your church? You live here, this is your spot. Okay, cool. It's good to see. And then I know we got some people that are visiting as well on vacation. Every time I come on vacation here, I think, wow, wouldn't it be amazing if life was like this all the time? And those of you that live here, I guess it is, right? This is just your life. That's wonderful. I know we got these four college guys up front. I went and said hello to these guys. I was kind of stunned. I'm like, look at these great looking guys. Partially, I felt like I want to just fit in with you guys. But they woke up. They came to church. That's really amazing. So everybody give these gentlemen a shout out. That's awesome. They're so embarrassed. Sorry about that, guys. We got Hamden, Sydney. You said Middlebrook in Vermont, Middlebury in Vermont. Then we got the United States Air Force Academy. That's awesome. And then the United States University of Alabama. So there we go, real time. That's awesome. Guys, I'm sorry. I'll stop. That's enough of that. They'll never come back. That was it. Andrew told me, he said, you can preach about whatever you want to preach on. You can talk about whatever you want, which was wonderful. I know you've all been in the middle of an Exodus study. I loved Andrew's message last week where he ended talking about the sea turtle that they saw on Sarah's birthday. That was quite stunning. What a beautiful, beautiful image, that all we have to do is, once we start seeing God differently, we can start experiencing God differently. That was such a beautiful way to end the message last week. So today's a hard right turn. The next 2 weeks, I'm just going to talk about two different parables that Jesus taught. And so the first one, we're going to be in Luke 16. It's called the dishonest manager or the shrewd manager. But before we get there, let me just set it up with this. This parable today is all about money. And I know a lot of you probably woke up today and you thought, all right, I'm going to go to church. But if I'm going to go, God, please allow them to be talking about money. Because who doesn't want to talk about money at church? Jesus spoke about money quite a bit. Out of everything that Jesus taught on, 25% or so, researchers tell us, was on the topic of money. So it is a pretty common topic for people to talk about. But I grew up in a church. I grew up in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and the church that I grew up in, I felt like they talked about money a lot. And if somebody were to ask me, if they were to say, well, then what's God's perspective of money? I would have said, he just wants my money. That's God's perspective of money. He just wants my money. It's the way I always thought. I just grew up thinking that. And I carried that into being an adult. But I feel like this parable we're going to look at today, and then a couple of ancillary passages we're going to look at, has really changed my view. But as we talk about wealth today, I don't want us to just think about money, because what we have is so much more than just the currency that is in our bank account or in our pocket, or what's not in our bank account or in our pocket. No, what we have, Jesus broadens the conversation to he wants to talk about everything that we have, whether it's your talent, whether it's your skill, whether it's the car you drive, whether it's the boat you have, whether it's the relationships that you have. He wants us to think about our whole life, not just our wallet, not just our bank account, but he wants us to see our whole life differently. And as we start seeing it differently, we start living in a different way. And so this is just, today is a message that for me has just changed my perspective. And I hope for some of you it's going to be a reminder, but for others of you it might change your perspective as well. But God doesn't just want our money. Now, I'm going to read you this passage out of Psalm 24 before we get to this parable. Psalm 24:1 says this. This is a beautiful little psalm. It starts by saying a psalm of David. King David wrote this psalm. Here's what he said in Psalm 24:1. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Or in the New International Version, it says, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Think about that just for 1 second. That the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. So does God just want my money? Does God just want your money? No. Why? because it's all his anyway. It's kind of a joke to think about God wanting my money when God's like, oh, it's your money? No, no, it's all my money. Everything is the Lord's. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. The world and those who dwell therein. The world and those who live in it as well. No, the best way to see life, the best way to see our stuff, the best way to see your education, your talent, your skills, whatever wealth you have or feel like you don't have, the best way to see it is in context of Psalm 24, that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, that God is the owner of all of it, that God has it all. And that is challenging. As Americans, I assume most of us in here are Americans, or if you're not an American, you at least are here, and so therefore you're ascribing in some way to the values of America, right? But the American dream, you're familiar with the American dream, right? It's one of the most brilliant aspects of this republic that we get to live in. What is the American dream? The American dream says that unlike most other civilizations, where most civilizations had a class system, right? And whatever class you were born in was the class you just existed in. And so if you were born in a certain class, there was no hope that you would get out of it because that was the one that you're just stuck in. You're confined to that class. But the American dream comes along and says, no, no, no. There's a way that you can actually break out if you work hard enough, if you're willing to take a risk, if you're willing to take a chance, if you're willing to go for something, if you're willing to have a dream and chase it and pursue it and work tenaciously to go get it, you can actually break out of the class that you're in, right? You can go from the bottom, you can go from the bottom to the top, right? As Outkast taught us in the 90s, you can get on elevators and you can go to the top. That's the American dream, and it's really a brilliant, brilliant, not just a concept, but it's one of the most remarkable realities of the society that we live in. And so when we start thinking about, okay, so the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, sometimes that bothers us, right? Because we think, yeah, but I worked hard for this, right? What's that song? I work hard for the money, right? You remember that song? That's how a lot of people feel. We think like, no, I worked hard for what I have. Blood, sweat, tears, I studied hard, I worked hard, I took a risk. No one else was willing to take it, and I took it. And what I have, okay, so the earth is the Lord and everything is in it. I understand that that's God's perspective, but that's hard for us. It's hard for us to believe that. And when it's hard for us to believe that, it's hard for us to live that out, right? I like this little passage, one other passage from the Old Testament that I want to read you before we get into this parable. This is in Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 8. And I want to read verse 17. This is God speaking to his people, who, amazingly enough, they were not living in America. There was not the idea of the American dream at this point. But they had that same posture. They had the same temptation to believe that this is mine. What I have is mine because I've worked for it, because my hands have worked hard for it. I've sweated for it. I've done everything I'm supposed to do, and this is mine. And he says to them, look at verse 17 in Deuteronomy 8, the Almighty God says, beware lest you say in your heart, beware lest you say in your heart that my power and the might of my hands have gotten me this wealth. Be careful. Be careful, because we're all tempted to say, my power and the strength of my hand, my hard work, they have gotten me this. Verse 18 says, do not forget. No, we better remember that the Lord your God, it is he who gives you the power to get wealth. It's God who gives us the power to even gain wealth. He is the one who's given you the power to get wealth, that he may confirm his covenant that he swore to your fathers as it is this day. Let me, if you don't believe what God says in Deuteronomy, surely you'll believe C.S. Lewis, right? It's not really a sermon until you quote C.S. Lewis. Here, listen to this. I brought this quote that's really a commentary on this Deuteronomy 8 passage. Listen to the way C.S. Lewis puts it. He said, every faculty you have, your power of thinking or of moving your limbs from moment to moment is given to you by God, right? Every faculty you have, your ability to think, your ability to move your hands, your ability to do whatever it is that you've done and whatever it is you're going to do, all of that has been given to us by God. And so C.S. Lewis says, therefore, if you devoted every moment of your whole life, if you devoted every moment of your whole life exclusively to his service, you could not give him anything that was not, in a sense, his own already. Isn't that beautiful? Every faculty you have, your ability to move your limbs, your ability to think, it's already his. He's given it to you. And so if you spent your whole life going, I'm going to try to give God back, right? I'm going to try to pay God back. I'm going to try to give him back. He says you could spend your whole life devoted to exclusively to his service, and you could not give him, in a sense, what was already his in the first place. It's already all his. No, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Everything that you and I have, everything we have in our hands, every skill that we possess, everything that's in our heart, it's all already his. And so what does the Bible say? What's the term that that Jesus comes along and calls us? What does that make you and I? Anybody know? A steward, right? We are stewarding what is ultimately God's. And so all that is a setup. All that's a setup for this passage in Luke 16 where we're going to look at the parable of the dishonest manager. Or other versions call it the parable of the shrewd steward. So the question that we should be asking, the question that no one woke up asking this morning, but I hope maybe we'll leave here asking is, all right, God, what is in my hands is what is in my hands. What you have allowed me to possess is what you have allowed me to possess. Whether it's a lot or whether it's a little, it's all from you, and I'm stewarding it. And so how can I treat it? How can I steward it? Not like a Hertz rental car. No, how can I steward it with your values in mind? How can I steward it the way you would have me steward it? How can I handle what you've given me in the most honoring way possible? And so Jesus comes along and he goes, well, I'll tell you a story about that. You know what a parable is? A parable, the idea of a parable, the Greek term parable, para, is alongside of. Balo is to throw. And so Jesus used this teaching form. It's really brilliant because he would take something every day. He would take something that people understand, that people could relate to, and then he would throw alongside of it, para balo, to throw alongside. He would throw meaning alongside of it. He would throw a truth alongside of it. So we would go, oh, okay, I couldn't have understood the truth, but I can understand someone who's growing something, someone who's building something, someone who's lost something. He tells us these stories and then throws alongside meaning or truth so that we can digest it, so we can get it. And so that's what we have in Luke 16. We have this parable where Jesus says, verse 16, verse 1, he says to his disciples, all right, so there is a rich man who had a manager. Okay, so two big characters in the story. There's a rich man who has a manager. Now, in almost every one of Jesus' parables, there is a God figure, and then there's a figure that's meant to be you and I, right? So in this story, pop quiz, who is the rich person? Who does that relate to? God, thank you. She mouthed it, thank you. Yeah, God. And then that makes us the manager, right? So in this story, as we read along, I want you to remember that. That God is the wealthy person that owns it all. And then you and I, we are the manager. We're the one managing the stuff. So this is a remarkable story filled with twists and turns. It even leaves us a little bit confused at the end, perhaps. But fortunately, Jesus sorts it out for us. Here's what he says. There was a rich man who had a manager. And charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. So someone has told the rich man, hey, your manager, he stinks. He's terrible. He's not good at his job, all right? And so the rich man goes, well, now I got to do something about this. Verse 2. And so he calls him in, and he says to him, he says, what is this I hear about you? Has anyone ever had that conversation with a boss, where the boss calls you in and says, what is this I hear about you? What an interesting way to start the conversation. I don't know. What is it you've heard? That I've done a great job? No, not that. Keep going. Okay, that I haven't done a great job, right? I mean, I'm sure he's kind of guessing it. He said, like, oh no, what's going on here? He says, I got something. I've heard something about you. What is this I've heard about you? And so he says, turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be a manager any longer. He says, you're fired. Or as a boss that I worked for a long time used to say, we don't fire people. We just free up their future, right? Which is a much better way to think about it. We're just freeing up your future. You can't work here, but here's the great news. You can work anywhere else. Your future is now free to go do anything else. And this is what essentially he does to this manager. He fires him. And so the manager says to himself, which I love this idea, because we all have this running dialogue with ourselves all day long, right? The manager says to himself, he says, self, what am I going to do about this, right? He says, what shall I do since my master is taking the management away from me? Now, I don't like this phrase. I don't like it. To me, this gives us insight into why this manager wasn't a good manager. Think about this. Look at what he says. He says, what shall I do since my master is taking away the manager, taking away the management from me? What does that reek of? Entitlement, right? That he thinks this was my job and he's taking away my job. Which if I could sit down with this gentleman, I would be like, hey, bro, let me just help you out with this. He's not taking away your job. It was never your job in the first place. It's his job. And you lost it. You had it, but you lost it. You can't be on Facebook all day long and think that you're doing a good job. It wasn't working out. And so you lost the job. But it's not his fault. No, it's your fault, right? But his inability to look in the mirror is probably part of the problem anyway, but that's a different sermon for a different day. So he says to himself, he says, what am I going to do now that my master has taken this management away from me? And he says these two things, which I think are really, I relate deeply to these. He says, I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm too ashamed to beg, which I love that. Because if you tried to dig anything recently, digging a hole is not easy. It is tough work. Just on a side note, Nate Bargatze has got this amazing comedy special on Netflix that is just recently released, and he has a whole bit about digging a hole and the challenges of that and why more people don't kill other people because then you'd have to dig a hole to bury them, and that's just too hard to do, and it really saves a lot of lives. That's a little crass. I'm sorry we don't know each other that well, but go watch it. It's very funny, very clean, wonderful for the whole family. But I relate to that. It's difficult to dig something. And so this guy's going, I don't want to end up having to dig holes. And then he goes, and I'm too ashamed to beg, which I get that as well. I'm like, nobody wants to sit around and beg. That feels bad as well. And so he goes, Eureka, though, I've got an idea. I know what I'm going to do. He says, I've got an idea. I've decided that what I'm going to do is when I am removed from management, people will receive me into their houses. This is really important. He says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use my last day to treat people in such a way that when I don't have a job anymore, in the next life, they're going to receive me. I'm going to have curried up favor with them. This is his idea, and it's a pretty brilliant idea. He's basically recognizing that what you do today matters tomorrow, right? This is a really important principle of life. You know that the slogan of Las Vegas, right? You're familiar with this? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, right? Not a very great way to live because it's just not true. It's pretty good marketing because I know it, you know it, but it doesn't really add up because what happens in Vegas doesn't just stay in Vegas. No, it goes to every other part of your life, right? What happens today affects tomorrow, and what you do tomorrow affects the next day. This is the way life works. But Jesus is going to make this point at the end that not only does what you do today affect tomorrow, but what you do in this life affects what happens in the next life, the life that is to come. Hold that thought, because we're going to get to that in just a second. So verse 5, so he summons his master's debtors. He goes to accounts receivable. He goes, who all owes money? And they go, oh, here's a couple people that owe money still. And he goes, great, call them in. And so he summons these people who have debt one by one. He says to the first, how much do you owe my master? And this gentleman says, I owe him 100 measures of oil. Bro was making a lot of hummus, I guess. I don't know what he was doing with all that oil. Maybe he had a little restaurant on the side. But nonetheless, he couldn't pay it. He owed all of this oil, and he couldn't pay the oil back. And he goes, well, why haven't you paid it back? And he goes, because I don't have it. And he goes, well, how much do you have? And the guy says, well, I do have 50 now. And so he says, quick, take your bill, sit down, and write for 50. Give me 50. Go rent a U-Haul truck. Go get the 50 barrels of oil. Bring it here because we're going to do a deal right now. And the guy's like, are you allowed to do this? And he's like, don't ask questions. Just go do what I tell you to do. And then we'll make it straight. We'll make it well. And so he does just that. And then he calls in the next one. He says, how much do you owe? And he says, I owe 100 measures of wheat. And he's like, well, can you do the 100 measures of wheat? And he's like, no. He's like, what can you do? He's like, I can do 80. He's like, cool. Go get the 80. Go bring that. And then we'll call it even, right? And then here's the big aha for him. The twist of the whole story. Remember, Jesus is telling the story. Jesus is making up the story. But look at verse 8. Look at what he says in verse 8. The master commended the dishonest manager. Is that confusing to anyone? That's a little confusing, right? Why did the master commend? And Jesus says, the dishonest manager, the manager that wasn't honest. Why did he commend him? Jesus is going to tell us in a second. The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. He was shrewd. He was thoughtful. He was leveraging what he had today to make friends in the next life. He was using what he had to make sure that there were people that knew him, that thought of him well in the next life. And Jesus says this master commended this manager because of his shrewdness. He was thoughtful about the way he was living. And then Jesus gives us this application. He says, for the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the sons of the light, which that's a very complicated conversation that we'll have to put a pin in and talk about another day, but I want to get to verse 9. And so a lot of times Jesus will end these parables and the disciples, his followers, will be listening to it and they'll go, cool story, we don't know what you mean. And then Jesus would just be done. He would just leave. He'd go somewhere else. And they'd be looking around going, did you understand it? No. Did you understand it? No. But then sometimes Jesus would apply. He would actually give the application. He'd give the commentary to the parable. And fortunately for us today, this is one of those where he just clearly says, here's what all that was about. If you're confused, if you didn't understand it, let me explain it to you real clearly. And so verse 9, Jesus tells you, and I tell you, make friends for yourself, even if by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings. So make friends for yourself, however you have to do it, so that in the next life, there will be people who will welcome you in because of how you handled this life. I don't know about you, but when I read that, I think about people in my life who used what they had, and because of the way they used what they had, I have a relationship with Jesus. In the next life, in the afterlife, when I see them, I will be so grateful to see them. Some of them wouldn't even know me. I don't know how well we'll recognize each other in eternity, but some of them, I don't know that they will know who I am, but I certainly know who they are because of the way they used what they had on this earth to help me know Jesus. And the same is true for you. Who are those people in your life? Who are the men and women in your past, in your history, that opened up their home and hosted that Bible study or hosted that group or hosted that event through your church, and you don't know how they got the means to be able to do it. That's not the point. The point is not about the righteousness or the unrighteousness of the wealth. The point is, what are they doing with their stuff? They're using their stuff. They're using their home. They're using their car. They're using their time. They're using their talents. They're using their wealth in such a way that you got to know Jesus because of it. And think about the way we feel in eternity. Honestly, it makes me emotional to think about, because I can see their faces. I think about their names, and I think about, we're going to be in heaven. You know this, right? That this life that we're living here on earth is just, it's a blink of an eye. It's like a vapor. It's here today, it's gone tomorrow. It's so short, right? The dash between when you're born and when you die. It's so small in the grand light of eternity. That eternity is forever. This life is really, really short. And there are men and women who used what they had in such a way, they used their time, they used their stuff, they used their wealth, that you and I, we're going to be in heaven for eternity with Jesus because of the way they use their stuff. How are we going to greet them? How are you going to greet them? I know for me, I'm going to be overwhelmed with gratitude, going, I can't believe that you did what you did. I can't believe that you used what you had. I can't believe that you opened up your home. I can't believe that you took the time. There was a guy in my life when I was 15 years old. I was in this Bible study on Thursday morning. We would meet at the Waysider restaurant in Tuscaloosa before school. And he picked me up for 2 years. He picked me up before school and took me to meet some other guys for breakfast. And we didn't always talk about Jesus every Thursday morning, but sometimes we did. But I'm just telling you, my life, my relationship with God, it is nowhere near what it would have been hadn't it have been for that amazing person in my life who used what he had. He was a poor college student, but he used his time, he used his truck, he used his skills in such a way that when I get to see him in the afterlife, I'm going to be overwhelmed saying, hey, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I don't know that I would be here if it weren't for you. But you used your stuff in such a way that I will welcome you into my home in eternity. And the same thing is true of you. Some of you use your stuff this way. Some of you use your life this way. And maybe for others of you, this is a challenge. For me, this is a challenge. Because it makes me take an inventory of what is it that I do have. It's not about whether you have a lot or whether you don't have a lot. It's all about how you're using what you have. When you think about what you have, would you be willing to take an inventory of it and go, how am I using it? Am I using my time? Am I using my skills? Am I using my talents, my ability? Am I using my wealth in such a way that I'm helping introduce people to Jesus in this life? Because all that really matters for eternity is, do you know him? Do you know the Father? And you get to participate in that. We get to participate in that with other people. And this is a change in perspective. I'm telling you, it's a different way to see your life. It's a different way to see your stuff. When you start to realize that everything is the Lord's, that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. When you start to realize that God has called us to be managers, to be stewards. When we start to realize that I got to figure out what his values are. What does he care about? And then when I do, am I willing to take stock? Am I willing to take an inventory? Am I willing to look at everything I have and ask the question, how am I doing? How am I using what I have so that I can help others know him? Jesus, in this parable, says, that is what I celebrate. I celebrate men and women who are using what they have, whether it's a lot or a little, to help introduce people to me so that in the next life, there will be people there that say, thank you, thank you, thank you. I wouldn't be here if it were not for you. And so today what I've been praying for is I've been praying that God would give us different eyes. God would give us some eyes to get creative. Because I thought about applying it. I thought about giving you some ideas. But I thought, you know what? God is way more powerful than any of my dumb ideas. God is way more personable than anything that I could say. And if you would be willing to open it up and ask him, if you would be willing to open up your hands and say, God, here's what I have. How could I use it? God, here's what I have. How could I use it in such a way that other people might know you? I guarantee you, that is a prayer that he will answer. That's a prayer that if you pray it, if you ask him for eyes to see your stuff, if you ask him for creativity on how to use it, if you'll ask him for a heart that would want to use your stuff, use your talents, your skill, your time, your money, your wealth, whatever it is that you have, if you ask him, hey, I want to use it. I want you to use it. I want to partner with you to be able to use it to help introduce other people to you. I guarantee you, he'll give you an idea. He'll give you a thought. Now you might go, ooh, I don't like that one. You got another one? And the great news about God is he'll go, okay, I'll give you another one. How about that? Maybe that one was too much. Maybe that one was too challenging. Maybe we need to start small, right? Maybe we need to take baby steps. But either way, I'm telling you, if you ask him, that's a prayer that he'll answer. And so I hope today that as we're, as we sing, as we go out throughout our day, as whatever God does, just to remind you of the time that we've spent together, that maybe you would be willing to ask him, God, help me to see. Give me eyes to see what I have. Give me a heart that would use what I have to introduce other people to you, because that's really what life is all about. Jesus commended this manager because he recognized that this life is not all there is. Let me pray for us before Daniel comes back up and leads us in a song. Heavenly Father, we just, whether physically or even in our hearts, we just open up our hands to you. Everything we have is yours. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Who am I to think that I own it all? And so, Father, if we're really willing to believe that, if we're really willing to change our perspective and change our mind about that, I just pray that you would give us the courage to ask, give us the courage to pray that prayer. Help me to see my stuff. Help me to see my life the way you see my life, that it's all yours. So give me the courage to ask. Give me the eyes to see. Give me the courage to be able to ask, how do you want me to use it? Give me the eyes to be able to see it. And I just pray, God, that you'd give us a vision. Give us a vision for our life. Give us a vision for our stuff. Give us a vision for our time. Help us to use it wisely. Help us to use it shrewdly that we might introduce other people. We might allow the love of Jesus to permeate through what we have. We would allow the love of Jesus to move beyond the walls of our home, to move beyond the doors of our car, the boundaries of our time, that you would use everything we have to be able to connect other people to you. Thanks for the people that have gone before that have done that for us. We just tell you thank you, thank you, thank you for them. I pray that we'll be those kinds of people. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Clay. At the end of each service, we try to take some time just to reflect and respond. For some, that may be to take that next step.